Welcome to a Bowden Education podcast. In this episode, as part of our In the Spotlight week, we talked to Nick Owen about self-care. Nick was a primary school teacher and had 20 years of classroom experience. He's also a mum of two teenage boys and is now the director of Zenic Wellbeing Limited. During Nick's teaching career, she successfully coordinated the pastoral care side of the curriculum, taking the lead in RE, PSHE, PE, and mental health and wellbeing. Her child-centered approach sees her train and work with children, young adults, parents, teachers, senior leaders, and outside agencies that support children and young adults within their role, such as social workers. She firmly believes that in supporting others with their well-being, everyone can then in turn help to support to become happy learners. Nick offers a variety of courses, creative workshops and educational programs to give people the tools to support positive mental health and well-being. Giving people the skills to use the techniques taught to acknowledge their thoughts, regulate their emotions, build their resilience and enrich their daily lives. Her work in the primary school sees Pip, the positive pixie, develop creative workshops involving drama and art therapy. Nick is dedicated to working together with schools, colleges, FE, local authorities, and indeed the corporate world to improve mental health and well-being for all. Welcome, Nick.
Hi.
Certainly a busy lady on a mission, I would say, and a fabulous mission to help everybody in schools and in the education world improve their well-being and mental health.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is my vision to try and make sure that I give everybody lots of proactive approaches to support their own mental health and well-being, because I think if we invest in our young people at a very young age, a very early age, then we're going to see them be able to be more independent and understanding of their own mental health and how they can just make sure that they're keeping it positive and keeping it in a good state of repair, really, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's about being proactive. And we're going to talk a little bit about this. But self-care is something that we hear a lot about now. We hear that sort of term thrown about. And I think people have different interpretations of what they understand by self-care. So how would you define self-care?
Wow, yeah, because this is a big thing, and I cringe at some things that get said about what self-care is. And I guess self-care, what it isn't, is, you know, yoga, compulsory yoga and cakes on the table in the staff room. For me, self-care is the deliberate practice of taking action to preserve or improve your own health. So it's physical and mental. It's personal, and the acts of self-care are dependent on your mood, external factors, and what you need at that particular time. So from one day to the next, what your self-care needs are can actually change dependent on those factors. So I think it's a deliberate act of actually doing something positive for your own mental and physical health. And when we start to understand the importance of self-care, we realise that it's not one of those buzzwords that needs to be bandied about. And it's certainly not something that needs to be used as a stick to berate people with and make people feel guilty about.
Because I think so often when self-care can be linked, can't it, to the idea of self-indulgence and indeed sort of laziness and taking life easy, which it isn't at all.
No, not at all. It's an investment in yourself. And my journey of self-care and the importance of self-care began nearly 7 years ago now, when I really reflect and think on that. And it is life-changing. You know, I feel like I've made positive steps in my own personal life, but also what I can give to others as a result of it.
Yeah, so moving on, that leads nicely then, doesn't it, into the idea of why then is self-care so important for teachers and those working in education?
Well, I mean, when we look at the benefits of self-care, the fact that we can make sure that we are staying healthy, that our immune systems are in a good state, really, that we can monitor our stress levels, that we can be more productive, that we can serve others in a really positive way. And I think as teachers and people who are in education, our natural thing is to be really, we are a caring profession. You know, we wouldn't be doing what we do for the salary that we do if we didn't care, to be honest. And I don't know what it is, but we seem to have lost sight of looking after ourselves first. You know, that ancient old analogy of putting your own mask on first when you're on the aeroplane so that you can help other people to put their masks on. And I hate that analogy because it's so tired. But it's really true. You know, people in education, we spend so much time worrying about our students. I know for a fact that, you know, when children walk through my door every morning, I'd worry if they'd had the breakfast or what some of the children's moods were, what they'd experienced before they'd even got to school, what they'd experienced the night before. You know, I'd worry if they've had the breakfast, whether they'd picked up the lunch, whether they've got the warm coats for playtime. I'd worry if they'd, you know, got worked up about the spelling test or they were worried about not handing homework in. I'd have all these worries just about these children, and I'd try to alleviate that pressure and that stress and be kind and make sure that they felt safe and secure in my classroom. And when you invest all that time in your children, I actually stopped nearly 7 years ago and went, why do I not do that for myself? Why do I not worry if I've been to the toilet or whether I've had my lunch? You know, these things that weren't happening. I was on this constant, ooh, I'm in school, I'm in work, I've got to do. And part of that was linked to wanting to be the best for my students, wanting to be the best colleague to support my other colleagues. It was also to do with the pressure that I put on myself. And the expectations that I had of myself, that this was my role and this is what I should do. And I think when we stop and think, and we think, actually, if I had that extra hour in bed, or I went out at lunchtime and had 20 minutes away from the children, I'd be in a calmer state, I would be more productive in the afternoon. If I actually had 15 minutes to sit and eat my lunch, then, you know, I've nourished my body that needs that energy. And if I've been to the toilet, you know, these are, when we talk, I mean, obviously, I think Maslow's hierarchy of need has been bantered about in the press at the moment, following a certain head of a certain establishment, saying that we shouldn't be spending time on making sure children have eaten before we start educating them. When we think about that hierarchy of need and our physiological needs, if we're not meeting just those basics as teachers, what are we showing our young people?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we kind of laugh and we use this about going to the loo, but actually it's a real thing. Teachers get through the day and realise they haven't been to the loo, they haven't eaten lunch, or they've eaten part of their lunch, and, you know, get to the end of the day and they have just been on this sort of treadmill all day, and it's simply not good for our health.
No, it's not. I mean, it got to a point where I wasn't eating my lunch, this, that, and the other. And then I'd be worried about students. Have they had the lunch? Have they made sure, you know, and has that child had seconds? Like, I've asked the dinner lady to make sure, because I know his evening meal's not going to be great. And it got to the point where I thought, why am I not, I could do this in a different way. And I think we always use that excuse of not having time. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And if the world stopped, which it did in March of 2020, it all stopped. Did the world end? No. And I think what we need to start to do as teachers is look at how life has changed and how we can press the pause button every now and again. And it makes sense to do that and to just check in with ourselves. I used to go and have my lunch with some of the children, you know, the ones that I were worried about. But I'd sit and have my lunch, and that would reinforce a connection, and we'd have conversations about what they were into, and having that time to sit down myself. And it's not always the greatest, is it, going having your lunch with your students, because sometimes you do need that break and that switch off. But being able to recognize what I needed, you know, if I was worried about a child, I could go and sit, well, can I sit with you and have my lunch, is that all right? And they'd be like, yeah. And then they tell you things that you perhaps you wouldn't get out of them if they were in the classroom setting. And you know, and it's building that rapport and connection with your students as well. So I killed two birds with one stone, and I felt quite good actually, you know, knowing that, you know, little Johnny's really into his Minecraft, and he's built this wonderful world, and such a body's come and joined him, and these friends with him online, and he's having those understandings, because you can bring that into your teaching then to get children engaged. So I just think it's a win-win situation when you stop and pause and think, how can I build in my own self-care within my working day?
Yeah, and it needs to be a conscious thing. It's not just going to happen. You need to be very conscious, I think you do, about how you're going to balance your week. And I talk a lot, Nick, about that I don't believe in trying to create a work-life balance, because I don't think it's attainable. And I've written and talked around this. And it doesn't mean to say that I think, oh, just give up on it. Absolutely not. It's about creating balance in a wider picture. And at times we're not going to have balance, you know. So there are going to be weeks when we are really rushed off our feet because we've got a whole range of commitments, maybe both personal and professional, and we're out in the evenings, that we've got parents' evening, we've got reports to write, you know, all of those things come into certain times, and you're not going to create a balance.
Yeah.
During those times. But the key thing for me is that you manage this, and then you readdress it at other times when you're quiet. But I worry about people that want to try and keep this balance, because I do think it's a term that we've kind of grabbed onto, and I think it can add more stress if we're trying to keep this balance. But I think managing a disequilibrium, which is essentially our lives, they are always in disequilibrium, that if we manage that and take ownership of it, then we're empowered to look after ourselves and make decisions. But to be empowered.
Yeah, self-care is fluid. You know, some days it can be a trickle, sometimes you need a waterfall. And I think it's a case of knowing and being able to give yourself that time every single day is to say, how am I feeling today? And what do I need today? Some days I'm like Superwoman. I whiz around the house, everything's clean and sparkling, all my jobs around the house are done. And then I've cracked on, I've cleared all my emails, and then I've sent emails out and I've been really productive. And there's other times where it takes me an age just to switch the computer on, because I'm tired and I need something more than what I've been giving myself. And to understand where you are in your emotions and your feelings and what you need is so crucial, especially as a teacher, because what you need to be able to say to children and show them through your how you conduct yourself is that things happen. Bad things happen, good things happen, and how we deal with that and how we look after ourselves through that situation is absolutely key. It's okay to have feelings, it's okay to have those emotions, and it's how you manage those effectively and be the best that you can be on that day. And I think some days if you were to compare myself and put myself on a bar chart, you know, Monday could be 90%. Tuesday, I might feel a bit tired because I've whizzed around at 90% and I might only be hitting at 70, but that's my best that I can give you on Tuesday. And that should be good enough. And I think as teachers, we have this high expectation, and it's a self-expectation that you've got to be at 150% all the time, and it's just not feasible. And I think that's when you're talking about your work-life balance. I mean, I'm a mum of two boys. Sometimes my boys need me more than they normally do. You know, it depends on what they've got on. My son was at the dentist yesterday. He's got a fear of the dentist, so I had to be on proper mum alert, and I had to be really in the moment and talking through things, how things were going to go. And then next week, I know that we're not at the dentist and he's pretty all right to, you know, take himself to school and he'll be quite happy with things. It's about looking at what the situation needs from you as well. Mm. And being able to actually say, okay, that's okay. But protecting the little bits of what you need, you know, is really important. Having those compassionate boundaries, I like to call them. So it's understanding that what you're going to be doing might affect other people, especially if you're in a family unit and you've got commitments to your family. And it's understanding how you can say no effectively without it being really, you know, misinterpreted as being lazy or being selfish or all of those things. And it's about making sure that you've got the tiny elements that you need to function as a human being.
Yeah, and I think honesty and being honest about how you're feeling, and you and I have had some sort of remote conversations about, and even today I said, oh, it's been a hell of a week and everything's kind of going wrong. But I think sometimes to acknowledge that you're not firing on all cylinders is absolutely fine, because we're human. Yeah, I think we feel under pressure to always put a front on that we are on top of our game all the time, and we're just not. That's not human, that's not possible. So I think honesty is good. If we shared that, we can support then each other, because you know, you might be feeling great and so positive one day, and there's me going, I can't log on and help me, and I'm really stressed, and you, if you're in a positive mood, you say, look, it doesn't matter, calm down. And we catastrophize sometimes when we're not in a good space, and if we're open about it, our colleagues can then work with us to say, look, doesn't matter, how can I help? That, you know,
this is it's so important to be able to be honest about how you're feeling. And it does make, I mean, vulnerability is always seen in a negative light, and it's not. It should be celebrated. I used to stand in front of my year six class, and if I was having a bad morning, I'd share it with them. I'd say, listen, I've had a bad morning, bad start to my day. You know, Finley was up late last night. He wasn't feeling very well, and I feel a bit sad that I can't be at home with him to look after him. And I'm also feeling this. I'm also feeling that. Mm-hmm. And when you're honest with them, so if I'm a little bit narky, right, it's not you, it's actually me. And when you've got that openness, you know, that the kids have come at the end of the lesson, are you feeling now, miss? Are you all right? Do you want to come and do the daily mile with us and we'll do the walk? And I was like, yeah, all right, I'll come and do that. And, you know, that's when you're building that relationship with your children. And when you can say that you're honest with your emotions and share that openly. I mean, I'm not saying that we have to be completely, you know, telling our children everything. You know, there are certain things that you wouldn't share. You know, like my husband and I had a row last night. I'm in a bad mood. You know, I wouldn't share that, but I'd be saying, you know, I'm not in a really good mood. I've had a bad start to the day, or, you know, I didn't sleep very well last night. Just so that they can understand your behaviour as well. Mm-hmm. Because if you're you're the teacher, and if you're grumpy at the front of the class and you snapping at the and it's, you know, you've got to make sure that they don't take it personally, that it's not about them, because that can just switch them off completely, and then it you know, brings that communication and relationship down a notch, and it shouldn't do.
And it's our job, isn't it, to model and educate them in the round holistically, and modeling such sort of sharing of our feelings and talking about feelings is really important. And going back to vulnerability, Brené Brown's talk on vulnerability, if you're listening to this and haven't watched that, go onto YouTube and just Google Brené Brown vulnerability. It's a must watch without a doubt. So often those, and we know that teachers do feel stressed and overworked, busy, even overwhelmed some of the time. We acknowledge that to ourselves. So there'll be teachers sat listening, perhaps saying, I acknowledge, you know, I'm overworked. I don't give enough time for myself. They acknowledge their need for self-care, but sometimes seem to struggle then to action that. Yeah. Maybe feeling guilty or sort of not finding excuses, but finding it hard to find reasons to. So we've said we shouldn't feel guilty, but I think we need to reiterate you shouldn't feel guilty. But do you have any suggestions about how we can kind of push those feelings of guilt away to make time for us?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started to work on myself, that's how I'm going to phrase it, I was accused of being selfish. I was accused of being this, that, and the other. And I was like, oh, really? When we look at our day, and I do this on a regular basis, I do a check-in with myself to see how I spend my time. And I just draw a simple circle, make myself a little pie chart. And I think, right, what are my key things that I need? I need sleep. how long do I sleep for? So between 7 and 8 hours. So I'll write that on my pie chart. and then I eat. So I give myself a couple of hours for eating my breakfast, lunch and my tea, or my dinner, as people today say. So I always get that. People get really muddled with my dialect. And then I think about, you know, my commitments to my children. And then I think about my work commitments. And when you actually put down the hours that you spend on those different things, you will find there's about, you'll probably find about an hour or two that you don't actually, identify with what you do in that time. So then that got me thinking, right, well, if I don't know what I do with that time, how can I make that time more productive for myself? How can I, you know, I'm switching that mindset of, I need to be in the best possible place so that I can then do my job as a mum, as a teacher, as a colleague, as a wife, as all the hats that I wear. I need to make sure that if I put that hat on about me first, I can then be in the best possible shape physically and mentally to help everybody else. So when I looked at the time that I spent, I was looking for about an hour and a half, and I thought, right, okay then. So if I engineer time and protect that time, so I get up an hour early than the rest of the house so that I have time to sit down with, I have a cup of warm lemon water, I do some yoga stretching, I do a meditation. I find that they really work for me. You know, they might be quite stereotypical of what self-care might look like, but it works for me. And then I might, you know, put some music on, or I might, you know, put some music on while I'm in the shower, you know, and have my happy juice is flowing, and it's like, yes. I just think that when you can look and identify time in your day that you think, actually, I don't know how I use that time. It does disappear, but how do I use that time effectively? How can I use that for me? What can I do? And then protecting that time, putting those boundaries in place. Actually, I can't do that because I'm going for a run this evening. Or I can't do that because I'm meeting up with my friends. And I'm not going to work tonight because I want to sit and watch TV with my hubby. You know, I want to do something that's mind numbing because that's what I need today. And it's about protecting the time. I think if you can protect the time, and then you can identify what you need to do within that time on that specific day, depending on how you're feeling.
Yeah. And I've done with you your activity with the pie chart. And we all sit there and say, well, I don't have a minute in the day. And actually, when you rack your brains and sit down and do it seriously, you have quite a few minutes of unaccounted time.
Yeah.
And it is like you say about then thinking, well, what do I need? Is it that exercise? It's so easy. Well, I find it easy. And maybe it's an excuse that I haven't got time to exercise today. And then sometimes if you've got a busy week, sometimes a few days you've gone without exercise. And for me, that really helps keep my mind clear and it helps me think straight. It might not work for everyone, but if I forego the exercise, I actually find myself spiraling into more of a panic and stress mode of I can't cope. So to actually break that cycle and force yourself out to do something that you, I wouldn't say enjoy running, because I'm never going to say I enjoy running, but to force myself to plod around and take the pressure off and allow myself to just plod with some tunes on, create some playlists, you know, maybe some uplifting playlists or some more calm zen playlist to see, so you can just pop them on. Those things are really important. Csikszentmihalyi writes about the notion of flow, and it's when you get into that flow and you're not, your sort of time becomes irrelevant. You know that when you're a child, you don't know how long you've been doing something, you're just so into it.
Yeah.
And we need to allow ourselves time, don't we, to just get into flow, whatever that might be, whether it's Deadhead in the Roses or whatever, just to restabilize.
I take myself off into the kitchen. I love baking. So on last Friday, I thought, I've had a hectic day, I've had a hectic week, and we were sat eating dinner or tea. Finn just said, what are you doing tonight, Mum? And I just said, why, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm going to go online and play some games with my friends. I was like, okay. And Ethan was the same. My hubby, he has his chill out time on a Friday, does his own thing. And I just said, I think I'm going to do some baking. I'm going to be in the kitchen doing some baking. And both eyes lit up. He's like, oh yeah, will you make brownies? But that act of actually just being in the kitchen and pottering around in my own, and I didn't realise the time. I walked in there, I think it was about 6:30 after we cleared up. And then I think it was about half 10. And I was like, it's 10:30. Where's the time gone? And like you say, it's being that engrossed in flow of doing something that you're just in that moment, aren't you? You're not thinking about tomorrow. You're not thinking about what's gone on through the day. You're in the moment. And I think having that time
empties your mind. It's lovely.
Yeah.
It empties your mind. Yeah. And that's what you're
asking. I remember you saying about you on a baking course and that happened to you. It's like,
I was baking sourdough course. It was wonderful. I'd never, ever in a million years booked myself on it.
Yeah.
But I got it for a birthday present and I just had this whole day of just kneading and mixing. It was really busy and it was just so relaxing in the longer term. Because I just had the chance to escape all the worries of my, essentially, it's kind of like my Rolodex, you don't have them anymore, but, you know, this to-do list that never ends. And I'm always sort of thinking, oh, I've got to do that next, got to do that next. And you just need to kind of break that cycle for a bit just to...
Like the circuit breaker. If you've seen the image of all the matches lined up and they're on fire from the left-hand side and you literally just move about 3 or 4 up and the circuit's broken.
Yeah.
You know, the rest aren't going to catch on fire. And I think that's what self-care, of actually asking yourself that question, what do I need right now, is so important. And those are the two questions that I ask myself on a daily basis. How do I feel and what do I need right now? And when you can do that, you tailor what you need. Your own self-care plan happens organically, what you need.
But also, I think teachers as well, we get into habits. Well, as humans, we get into habits, don't we? About our routines. And I think some teachers, how you plan your work in life, it's very individual and depends whether you've got, you know, children at home and or not, or other things that you're involved with. But I think the routine and this sort of strange myth of expectation is that teachers work every night and work, you know, at weekends. And certainly I know many, many teachers that say they work the whole of Saturday, the whole of Sunday, as well as every night. And I think we get into these routines and it becomes a habit of doing that. And I don't think you need to do that.
No. I think when I was teaching, I got to the point where I was asking myself, what is the purpose of this task? What will it achieve? Will it improve the children's learning? Will it improve my productivity? Will it improve my state of mind? You know, there's nothing better than getting something done that's been on the back of your mind. You know, the reports you've got to write and you've got deadlines and you're like, oh gosh, you know. I think it's about being able to say, what's the value of this task? What is the point of it? What is the why? And when you can say hand on heart that you should be doing it, then you can get it done. Doing things needlessly, you know, that's a conversation that you need to have either with yourself or with your line manager or your SLT head teacher. And I do think, you know, I mean, I got a lovely piece of advice when I was an NQT, actually when I was on training, and she was the year three teacher, and she just said, just make sure that on Wednesday evenings you don't do a single drop of work. And I went, what do you mean? I said, I can't not do that. She said, get into the habit of having some time through the week where you don't do anything. She said, honestly, you will thank yourself for it, because that's your time to refresh and to rest, and you need that in order to carry on with the rest of your week. And I sort of like took that on board when I first started, and then I think, you know, life gets in the way. I've got children, small children, and I lost sight of that, and it got to a point where in my career I was going at guns blazing, and I just felt so tired and so stuck in this routine. And it's like, how do I break that? What do I need to do? It's only when you start to realize the importance of yourself within your role that you can start to do something about it. But I think a lot of us wear a badge of honor of, I've worked so many hours this week, and I'm such a good teacher because I work at the weekends, and I'm such a good teacher because I work every evening. What we need to be saying is, I'm actually a good teacher because I invest in myself, I look after myself, and in turn I can be the best version of myself for everybody who's around me. And when we can wear that badge of honour, I'll retire. You know, I put my feet up and down.
But I think it is so true, and there is plenty now research that's coming out to say that let's stop grinding ourselves down to sort of burnout, because we are less productive. And if we give ourselves more time and look actually at recent countries that are looking, and some have moved to a four-day working week or a shorter working week, like I think Sweden's down, reduced their, what they constitute as full-time. And the reports coming back out are that productivity is rising, not reducing, because people are working less. And it's because they've got more time to spend with their families, to look after themselves, more rested, and therefore they're more productive. And I think sometimes we're in this, stuck in this belief that we need to work harder, we need to work more. And actually what we're doing is becoming less productive because we're not physically able to deliver.
And this is it. I mean, the ultimate for me is my health. You know, if I'm not healthy, then I can't physically do my job. And, you know, especially in this current climate, you know, I do worry about our immune systems and making sure that we're on our top game, really, because that's our first line of defence, you know, from the common cold right through to, you know, what we've experienced. And I just think if we, you know, look after ourselves physically, and we get enough sleep, because the rest and restorative section of life that needs to go on, we seem to lose sight of, you know, the quality of our sleep and making sure we're getting enough sleep. That's the time when our brain actually works the hardest. It's the most alert that it is, you know, in the whole 24 hours. So we've got to make sure that it's got what it needs to, you know, to flush itself of, you know, I call it the plaque on the brain, you know, the stuff that... So it's a case of, you know, we need to make sure that we're resting so that we can clean our brains, that we can sort our the things that we've been learning, that we can, you know, those neural pathways that we're developing get strengthened, so that our bodies do rest, that our heart is sort of like looked after. You know, we need that time to rest and restore ourselves. And when people say to me, like, I only have 4 hours sleep, I'm like, how are you even functioning?
Yeah,
I'm like, you are, you know, you're waiting to knock on heaven's door at this point. You know, come on. It's not a badge of honour to say that you only function on 4 hours sleep. That is a massive sign to say, do you know what? You need to do something to change.
You've got to reshape your life. Yeah, and Arianna Huffington of set up the Huffington Post talks a lot about the importance, I mean, as do other people, but talks a lot about the importance of sleep after she had, you know, collapsed at work, because she was just burnt out. And it is so important. And exactly that, I've had colleagues that say, well, I work until 2, or I'm getting up at 4, and I'm thinking, what on earth are you doing to yourself?
Yeah, and it's that expectation, isn't it, that we put on ourselves, that perhaps colleagues put on you, you know, that your management team might put on you, because if you're always doing, they're always going to expect. And if you set that bar of, this is what I can produce within a week, you know, they're going to expect it.
Yeah.
Whereas you busted a gut to get to that bar, and you're like, oh, I've worked so hard. And I honestly do despair when I see, you know, I see lots of tweets of staff that, you know, are really struggling to maintain this expectation of time and effort put into your work. And I always have this belief that less is more. It's quality over quantity. It's all of those things that, you know, I'd rather do something really well, you know, something small really well, than do lots of things and leave them unfinished.
Yeah.
You know, I was a constant plate spinning, and you're like, you don't need to spin all those plates, just spin one when it's done, put another one on.
And it goes back to what we said, I think it's about setting boundaries and learning to say no, and people struggle with that. I've struggled with it, you know, I've always been a people pleaser. Oh yeah, I'll do it. Or I get an email, it doesn't even need to be face to face. We're looking for someone too, and I feel compelled to say yes. And I don't know where that comes from, but it's, I'm training myself to say no. You don't have to just say no. You know, you don't need to be rude. You can say, Absolutely, I'm more than happy to do that. However, it won't be until next week. Or
yeah.
I would love to be involved with that, but I'm not going to be able to really give it my full attention until the spring term. Mm-hmm. And yeah. things like that. And people can either say, that's great, I'd still love you to come along in the spring term, or oh, that's not what we're looking for. Well, then don't be involved. And yeah. I think it is training ourselves. But it goes back as well to something we said earlier, Nick, that I think part of this expectation is in our own minds. There isn't, it's not a reality. But I think because we all are playing the game, and in if you go to some sort of school environments, we're all playing the game of getting in early, leaving late, working every night. And that's the kind of conversation around the staff room. Mm. But it may, there might be 10 of us in the school, say, and we're all, this is the conversation, and this is the way that things have gone, that we all get in early, we all stay there till six, we go home and work, we're all burning out and stressed, and but no one's actually stepped forward and said, actually, I'm really struggling. Mm. If one person did that, there'd probably be at least 50% of the staff, if not all of them, said, well, I am too. So I think it's about, it's the kind of keeping up appearances that we fall in this trap. I'm not sure how real the expectations are or how much they're created.
I think a lot of this is to do with judgment and judgment of others. And I'll hold my hands up. You know, I used to be very critical of other people and judge people based on, you know, how early they were arriving or how late they were staying or not. And I read a really cool book that sort of like changed and shifted my perspective. It was and it gave me four rules, basically. Those were always do your best, do not judge other people, to make sure that you are not making assumptions, to have good communication with people. So say if somebody says something or does something, can you explain that a little bit further? Or what do you mean by that? Can we have a discussion about that? And then always to, you know, to be kind with your words. So when I read this book, it was called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, I think he is. And it made me realise that I shouldn't be judging other people. And when we have that shift in mindset, that's when you're then able to say, actually, I can't do that because I've got, you know, I've got to take my children to football practice that night, or that date doesn't really work for me. Could you ask somebody else? And I think it's about buying time, isn't it, as well, to make a conscious decision. I used to get asked, you know, oh, Nick, could you do this by the end of the day? And I'd say, I'll tell you what, can you come and find me at lunchtime and we can have a conversation about it? Because I can't think right now. Yeah. Or could you put that into an email and let me have a think about it? Or if there's nobody else that you can ask, come and find me at the end of the day and we'll talk about it. You know, so you're putting that seed of, actually, is there somebody else that could do this job? Or is it just that you come to me because I always say yes?
Yeah. Well, of course, people go to people that say yes because it shortens their...
Yeah.
It makes life easier for them because they're going to get a yes on the first draw rather than having to go around. And you do envy. I certainly have looked at people and think, how do you manage that? You never get asked for anything. You're having a life of Riley. Well, actually, it's not them. It's me that's the idiot because I've set myself up to be... They're probably looking at me and going, why do you do that? Say yes to everything. You complete fool. You know, so I think it is bravery. And I think sometimes buddying up, and not necessarily in your own school, it can be in your own school, but to buddy up with someone who's going to call you out when you are drifting back into the overwork and stress, yeah, and have an honest conversation, but also support you in saying, you can't do that because... Yeah. Or do you think that's too much? A kind of coaching friendship, really, that's missed.
Yeah, I mean, I work with a lot of head teachers currently working on a wellbeing charter programme, staff wellbeing mainly. And, you know, I will say to head teachers that are doing so much, and I say, that's not manageable. And because I've actually just pressed that pause and gone, you need to think about this. I've gone, oh, yeah, I do actually. And it's sometimes you just need that, like, a critical friend, don't you? But yeah, somebody who's supportive, like you say. So just say, you know, actually, you know, I've got a friend, an ex-colleague. She's absolutely amazing teacher. She works so hard, and she has everything, you know, for the sake of the children. And I know that she's ready to crash and burn. And, you know, she was, we were going to go for a walk out somewhere for the day. And she's like, I really can't, I'm really stressed, right? So we made the suggestion that we're going to go out for breakfast instead. So it's not taking up the whole day. She's still getting to see me and we're having a conversation, with maintaining our friendship, the connection, but it's also a chance for me to say, you need to stop.
Mm.
You know, I've been watching and I can see that you're getting really stressed. What can you do to change it? What can I help in any way? What can I do to support you? What can you say no to? Because when we say no to something, we're actually saying yes to ourselves. And when we say no to ourselves, because we're saying yes to somebody else.
Mm.
So I don't want to be that person that says no to myself all the time, because I know that that doesn't put me in a good place. And I think when you have that switch of mindset as a teacher, then the whole ball game changes and you become a better teacher.
Yeah. Well, I could talk to you about self-care and well-being all day, Nick. But we're going to wrap up. But Nick is going to be leading a self-care well-being workshop at our December conference, and you'll be able to get tickets when they're available on our website, but also on Eventbrite. But also follow Nick on Twitter, because you can hear then her every day a lovely little quote to boost your morning. So follow Nick at sphoenix78 on Twitter, and also follow to keep up with what's going on Bowden Education at Bowden Education. And we hope you found this useful, and go away and take a few moments to re-establish your routine and take some time for you. So thanks ever so much, Nick.
Thank you.